convening the meeting to order today. It is about 2 minutes after 3 on February 12, 2008. And let the record reflect that the members present today are Representative Gardner, Representative Keller, Representative Fairclough, Representative Seaton, Representative Roses, and myself, Wilson. And Representative Seaton will be leaving us in a little while because he's got a finance subcommittee meeting. So with this 90-day session, it kind of spreads us pretty thin because we're all on other committees. We're back on schedule or whatever. I don't know what all the terminology is. But here we are. We are going to go ahead and we have, first of all, I'd like to recognize that Debbie Tilling-Hast is our House Recording Secretary. Steve Ricci is our LIO monitor. And Becky Rooney is my committee aide. And when you testify, make sure if you're online that you give your affiliation, your name and your affiliation. And this is the order we're going to do the bills today. We're going to do House Bill 319, Dentist and Dental Assistance. Then two bills that deal with the Commission on Aging, House Bill 276 and 279. And after that, we'll have a brief presentation by the Alzheimer's Organization. So first up, we'd like to, the sponsor has a new CS, House Bill 319. And would someone like to move version K for us for discussion purposes?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 319, version K.
All right. And so we have version K before us. And Patty, would you like to come forward and explain the new version? It's Representative Ramirez's staff, and he isn't here, so we have...
Chair Wilson and committee members, for the record, my name is Patty Krueger, and I'm staff for Representative Ramirez. Along with me, should any questions need to be answered, is Dr. Logan. So the first two changes were brought about as the Dental Society had a meeting on February 7th. And that brought about the deletion of those first three sections. So this part of the statute shall remain unchanged. By defining direct and indirect supervision in these sections, it would exclude general supervision under which dental hygienists work. Then a third change was brought to our attention by the committee, and we more narrowly defined the delegation of duties of dental hygienists versus dental assistants. So we included the section that referred to anesthesia and those elements of the dental hygiene practice. And then on version M, page 3, line 30, the term subgingival was deleted to correct a drafting error. Subgingival means below the gum line, and dental assistants would not be working below the gum line.
Madam Chair.
Representative Fairclough. Oh, and let the record show that Representative Cisna has joined us. Go ahead, Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You referred to M, and we're on K. Did I hear you incorrectly?
Yeah.
So I'm wanting to find it on the K version to make sure.
Well, on the K version, we would be looking at page 2, line 28. And it was teeth without calculus. It used to say subgingival calculus.
I found it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that's the changes that you have made?
Those are all of the changes that were made.
Okay. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Can you explain sections 1, 2, and 3, why they were deleted? Does that just have to do with the direct indirect supervision, or are there other elements?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's exactly why they were deleted. Dental hygienists function under general supervision, and the original draft, version M, specified direct and indirect, so it would limit the kind of direction hygienists would function under.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Sounds like no more questions by the committee, so let's go off net. And there's a Dr. Paul Silvera from the Dental Society. Dr. Silvera, are you online?
I am.
Go ahead and give us your name, because I don't know if I pronounced it right.
It was pretty close.
And your affiliation.
Okay, Madam Chairman and members, it's an honor to speak to you today. My name is Dr. Paul Silvera. I'm a member of the Alaska Dental Society, and I'm speaking representing them, but I'm also speaking as a general dentist. I live in Valdez, and as any of you might know who have been here, Valdez is not considered rural because it's on a road, but boy, I mean, in practicality, we are very rural here. We're a long ways away from either Fairbanks or Anchorage. And I'd like to talk to you today about how this bill would affect me, my practice, my patients, and then you can probably infer from that how it could affect other dentists too. This bill is near to my heart right now because I've been without a dental hygienist for about 3 months. I've got one that's coming in on Saturday and should be able to start pretty soon. But the way this has affected me is that now I've been working in the capacity of a hygienist. Now, a dental practice is interesting because it's a healthcare facility, but it's also I'm also a small business, and it's really important that I'm able to maintain profitability so I can keep my business open, as well as keep my family and my spouse and employees happy and employed. The other part of it is patient care, and that's of course as big or bigger part of what I do on a day-to-day basis. Not having a hygienist puts a big burden on me in my practice. When I do a prophy, the fee that I collect just about covers my overhead. So basically, I don't make any profit on that. And if I do a Medicaid prophy, I'm actually going in the hole. I could pull out my checkbook and write a check for each Medicaid patient I see, because the fee I can collect just simply doesn't cover the overhead. Therefore, I have a hard time filling up my day with prophies, knowing that I can't make a profit on that. And that might not sound very good to somebody who's never run a business, but you have to make a profit. Otherwise, a business can't stay in business. A bill like this that would allow an assistant to do coronal polishing can change that. All of a sudden, I can economically do prophies on people that that need to have it done. There's a huge need here. I'm keeping up as best I can, but I can only do so many things, and I have to do other things too, like fillings and root canals, bridges and crowns and stuff like that. So it's really hard to fit everything in. Being able to free this up, being able to have one of my assistants do coronal polishing, can free me up to treat other patients with things that nobody else can do. So that's why I'm pretty passionate about this bill, and I'd like to see it passed. I can better serve my patients. I can better serve my employees and have a more profitable business that I can keep going, that I can provide the needed services that I need to here in Valdez. The problem with living rural is it's hard to attract a dental hygienist to a rural area. Some are going to be attracted to it, but most aren't. If they can get a job in Anchorage, most I believe would rather be in a city. Most hygienists are women, and to set up a home in a small fishing village isn't necessarily real attractive to all of them. So I've had a very difficult time attracting somebody who wants to live here and be a member of our community and enjoy Valdez for what it is. I'm sure it's the same for, I'm sure I'm not unique here, and people in other rural areas and communities are facing the same problems. And don't get me wrong, I love living in Valdez. I like the rural lifestyle. It's beautiful here, and that's why I've decided to make my home here, but it's difficult. I would certainly agree that I wouldn't have a problem at all with having my assistants certified in some manner. However, looking at a national sort of certification, I think would put undue restrictions on our situation here. It's not like outside. Getting doing things here isn't the same as you would in a city in Idaho or Washington or something like that. You know, we're unique here. It's 6 hours driving on a good day from here to Anchorage. And so if we could come up with some sort of program where they could be certified through supervision, through correspondence, through maybe a couple of courses in Anchorage or Fairbanks or something like that, would be great. I mean, I could do that. That would work fine. Or through videos or internet or lots of different ways we could go about certifying an assistant to be able to do corona polishing. I have confidence in my assistants. They're good. They're talented people. They're smart, and they can learn well. So I would have no hesitation on saying that I believe they could be trained to do corona polishing safely and increase the services to my patients, especially Medicaid patients. Like I said, I can't afford to see them. I do, but, boy, every time one comes in here, I see dollars marching out the door. It's hard as a businessman to see to be working at a loss. Anybody that's had a business knows that you just can't do that for very long, and certainly maintain your enthusiasm about it.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough has a question for you.
Sure. I'll answer to the best of my ability.
We'll see if I can remember the pronunciation on your name as I wrote it down.
It's Silvera. It's a tricky one.
I missed the L.
Yeah.
Dr. Silvera, I appreciate you and others who testified to this bill before talking about being able to increase the care to those that are on Medicaid. And so I'm going to ask you if you would support an amendment to set a sunset clause on this particular piece of legislation so we could measure truth in enactment, basically. And that is that you would start giving us a number of those that are on Medicare right now that you're serving and be able to show us a measurable difference of how many people you serve with this capability.
That's a pretty interesting concept, and I wouldn't be opposed to that. But this isn't the only bugaboo with Medicaid. And if you want to talk about Medicaid, we can. But, I mean, that's a big subject, and I'm not sure that you really have time to go into that.
Well, I think that we're both Medicare and Medicaid because both of those would fit into a lot of dentists are not taking them at all now because, you know, and so if this would help the dentists, as legislators, we're looking at this as ways to have more access for our patients, for our constituents out there. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
Sure, I understand. I accept Medicaid for kids right now, not adults. And I'll tell you why so many don't accept Medicaid, and the lousy reimbursement that we get is down there on the list. I mean, it's certainly one of the talking points, but there's other reasons that people tend to not take Medicaid. And I'll tell you, if I wasn't living in a rural area, I probably wouldn't accept it, simply because the rules are too arduous. It's really hard to figure out what I need to do and what I don't need to do, and the penalties are big for Medicaid. So the ridiculously small amount of reimbursement I get isn't the only sticking point for me. But you know, being able, and that's not going to make a huge difference. Being able to have assistants do coronal polishing isn't going to make necessarily a huge difference for me in that. I mean, I'm not all of a sudden going to say, wow, I'm going to start accepting all kinds of Medicaid simply because of that. But it would sure help anyway. And, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to, helping track that.
Okay. And Representative Fairclough has a follow-up question.
Sure.
Madam Chair, it was just a statement that we had heard to committee members. The reason why I offered that, and I did speak with the representative about this tongue-in-cheek, per se, that the testimony that we'd received before on this bill was this: it would attract or allow dentists to provide additional care, and I really didn't know whether that was a genuine ability of this or not. And to put genuineness in the bill, if we saw a measured increase, then we would know at the end that allowing this extra revenue generator, because that's what it is. And I don't mean that harshly. I just mean that in all practicality, it's a business that needs to be ran, and it needs to be ran well. And if you can let your talent do the things that the talent is supposed to do, and people with certainly a good skill set to do things that a professional, or I'm not saying it correctly because I don't want to, don't mean that insulted to anybody, but if the dentist does what the dentist does best, and we can let other people do those other things, and his office can make more money, that's a good thing. But the people who've testified before us are saying, and they keep bringing the argument forward, that it's Medicare, Medicaid that it would open up for, and I just don't know how genuine those comments are. I think that it's a true statement, and I'm not questioning the integrity of anyone who said that, but if it's because of economics, I understand that. Businesses need to run. But if it truly is because we can offer more service to others in our community, then I'd like to make sure that that happens, is why I offered that as a possibility. Thank you.
I see. Well, certainly I'd be able to offer more services to people in my community because I wouldn't be spending my time, like you said, I wouldn't be spending my time doing something that I could delegate.
Dr. Severa, this is the chairman. I've heard people say that they could have, and I don't want to say it this way because it doesn't sound quite good, but so I don't mean this to sound, if the dentist could kind of have an assembly line, I don't know, that's probably not the right word.
That's fine, I understand.
But
backup support.
You know, yeah, so that he could come in, see what needs to be done, and lots of times the Medicaid patients are the patients that don't show up after you've checked them out and everything and seen what you have to do, and then you make the appointment for the next time, lots of times they don't show up, and then you've lost that time. Is it possible for you to be able to then, if you've got somebody in your office that can do this, you can kind of prepare some of this, they can start doing it, and you can move on to the next patient so that maybe you can grab them and do them while they're there? I don't know. Did that happen?
Maybe. I don't treat my Medicaid and other patients differently. I see them all the same. And I certainly wouldn't say, oh, this is a Medicaid patient, we have to have an assistant do the coronal polishing for this one. And I mean, I don't.
No, I didn't mean that. But things would move faster so that you would have time to do that while they were there rather than send them home and have them come back another time.
Well, yeah, I would say that sure could help that out. But the biggest thing that this the biggest impact this would have for me is to be able to offer, you know, just flat more hygiene services when I don't have a hygienist. I mean, that's a big problem for me is when I don't have a hygienist, I'm really in a bind.
Okay, well,
you know, I'm stuck, and I'll be honest with you, even if my assistants could do coronal polishing and I have a hygienist, I'd probably have them do it because I want to keep them happy. I want to keep them busy. But and maybe I would have the assistants doing coronal polishing. I don't know. I haven't really I'd have to see how both things work.
Yeah.
But keeping my hygienist busy would certainly be my first priority. But, boy, especially in these times when I don't have one,
yeah.
That's going to make a huge difference for me.
Okay, well, thank you for your testimony. Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much, Dr. Silbert.
Okay, well, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
We have somebody else online, but they want to listen. Is there anyone else online that would like to make any comments?
Yeah, hi. This is Dr. Pete Higgins in Fairbanks.
All right.
And we are discussing HB 319, correct?
Correct. State your name again, please.
Pete Higgins. I'm the acting president for the Alaska Dental Society at this time.
Okay.
And obviously I'm calling in favor of trying to get the expanded duties bill passed for the assistance for the state of Alaska. I've been working closely for the last couple of years trying to get access into the state, especially in the rural areas, you know, so we can see more patients. Also, better care. And the problem that we're running into is a hygiene shortage throughout the state. Most hygienists like to work in Anchorage or bigger cities. They don't like to go out to the rural areas. So the docs that are working in the rural areas, well, they basically need help. And so in these two areas here of corona polishing and placing of dental materials would certainly help as far as that goes. You know, the Alaska Native Corporations and the federal government has been doing this program for years now. This is not something new. And they found that it has really helped on the access care. I'm also part of the Alaska Dental Society working with the Medicaid program and trying to get more dentists involved in the Medicaid program if we can. And, you know, we feel that this is a great avenue to bring access to that group of population of individuals, and hopefully we'll take down some roadblocks as far as participating dentists that can do it, because now, you know, economically it may be a little more feasible for them to do that, plus they'll be able to see a little bit more patients as far as that goes, as far as the coronal polishing goes on that end. A lot of states have already adopted these programs. I've lived in Alaska pretty much all my whole life, and one of the things that I've noticed about Alaska is that we always seem to be a little bit behind the times. When I became a dentist, I promised myself that we would stay on the cutting edge of technology and we would bring the best health care we can to the state. So with that said, obviously the expanded duties for assistance is well needed. It's a program that needs to go through, and most importantly, that way we can stay competitive with our colleagues in the lower 48 also, because we have assistants that are coming up that are already certified in some of these areas. I have an assistant that's been certified in both these areas for the last 8 years, but I haven't been able to use her in this category only because we have no legislation for this. So I obviously have been pushing hard to make this a reality.
Okay, and also, for your information, I know the Department of Social Services has just done a study, and in that study it was reimbursement for Medicaid patients, and one of the ones that they were included in the study was reimbursement for dentists, and the results of that study are going to be out next month, I believe. So I'm hoping that they're going to show us where there will be an increase, and that will help definitely also. But anyway, but
right.
Anytime that happens, of course, that's a lot more money for the state. So, but we are looking at it, and that study will be out soon. So,
well, good. You know, Alaska is a unique state only because we don't have an extensive road service to most of the places. And so the dentists that want to practice outside the into the rural areas, their basic problem is hygiene and getting qualified personnel to go out there and work on it. And so the thought was, when we put this together, was most assistants live where they're working with these dentists, in the villages or whatnot. They've been there most of their lives, and they don't want to leave. Unfortunately, they don't want to become hygienists either. So this program will certainly help in that matter, because that's what we're trying to involve, is the people in the local areas that will be well trained and obviously certified to be able to pick up these two areas that we need.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else online? No one else is online? Okay, is there anyone else in the room that hasn't testified already that would like to testify? Okay, thank you. Then what I'm going to do is going to close testimony. And I do have two amendments that I would like to bring forward.
Before we go to the amendment, could I ask a question?
You sure can. Representative Roses.
Thank you. At the end of the, on the third page of version K, where it defines direct supervision, then it defines indirect supervision. I understand that completely, but where I have a little bit of a question, maybe even a little bit of a concern, is in the direct supervision means a dentist licensed in the state is in the dental office. Okay. Does the dental office mean where the chair is and the patient is, or does the dental office mean that he's three rooms down seeing another patient while this person's in that chair? I mean, how do you define dental office as opposed to in indirect supervision? We have a dental facility. And so I guess I'm having a tough time understanding the difference between dental office and dental facility. If office means in the actual room where the procedure's taking place, where the patient's in the chair, or you understand what I'm saying? I'm not sure I necessarily want somebody working on me that I've got to wait for the guy to run down from the floor up above and down the hall and the stairs and all the way down when somebody hollers help, as opposed to they're right in the room. So I have just a little bit of a concern there, so help me with the definition of dental office and dental facility.
For the chair, Representative Roses, I'd like to direct that, have
anybody,
Dr. Logan address that.
For the record, David Logan, I'm a dentist here in Juneau, Alaska. Through the chair, Representative Roses. The words are interchangeable for dental office and dental facility. Those definitions were borrowed from the hygiene statutes, and they list them out exactly that way for direct and indirect supervision. Now, why they made the distinction from one to dental office and the other to dental facility, my guess is it just kind of went by somebody's eyes for that. You've obviously looked a little closer than most of us have on this, but the only reason for that wording is that's exactly how it's listed for indirect and direct supervision under the dental statutes, under the dental hygienist statutes.
So let me, if I may follow up.
Follow up, Dr.
So for the record, our intent, Dr. Roses, thank you. for the record, the intent of the sponsor of this bill, and for our purposes, the two are interchangeable, and that one cannot later come and say, well, I was in the building even though it was five stories, I was on the fifth floor, as opposed to somebody that at least is in auditory contact with somebody that may need assistance, because I see this as a huge difference, and it's maybe something that we need to address. So.
Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Roses. Yes, dental office and dental facility are meant the containment of the dental office in any common areas it shares with adjacent to generally other dental offices, but I guess conceivably you could have a break room or something like that that's shared with a non-dental office, but yes.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. No further questions on that, but I will be offering an amendment to try to make sure that there is clarification on that.
Okay.
And I appreciate your definition of dental office. That was my understanding as well. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. Before you, I have two amendments. And just looking at the bill itself, I would like to move amendment number one. And this is just a conceptual amendment to require all dental assistants that wish to become certified to perform the corneal polishing or to perform the restorative functions must be certified dental assistants. And then a certified dental assistant is, CDA means a dental assistant that has registered with the board, passed the dental assisting national board exam, and maintains the credential CDA by meeting the national board recertification requirements. And
I'll object for...
Okay. And just so that you know that the Dental Assisting National Board exam offers three different ways to becoming certified. And all pathways options require CPR, which is pretty – most communities have someone in the community that you can do that with in the community, with the EMT group or the fire department or something like that. But anyway, so the three different options are graduation from a dental assisting or a dental hygiene program itself, high school graduation or equivalent, and 2 years work with an experienced dentist, or current or former dental assisting national board exam the certification or graduation from that accredited school, they already have a dental degree program or they've graduated from a foreign dental degree program. So there's three different ways that they can do it, and some of that can, much of that can be done online. So, if someone wants to do that, there are ways to do it without actually leaving and going to school somewhere. And that kind of helps the girls that are already been in the office for 2 years working, as long as they just take the test, and if they pass it, then they can be certified. You know, that tells us that they know what they need to do. So that is my suggestion, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand correctly, in the state of Alaska, we already have dental assistants. They're not certified. The bill proposes to allow them to get certification to do two functions, coronal polishing and restorative function.
And those are two things that they don't now do, don't know how to do.
But they would have to get a certificate in order to be able to do those two functions. If your amendment passes, they would have to get another type of certification in order to do the coronal polishing and the restorative function. So you propose they would have to get those two specific certifications and additionally become a CDA?
No.
One additional.
Just
this is three different ways to get it.
Yeah, that's you can do it this way, or this way. See, all pathway options require the CPR, but anyway, those are the different options that are available. And the dental board, the present dental board, could provide a way for them to be certified, but it would have to be in order for them to accept it and say, yeah, you can be certified, they would have to have done one of these three things.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in essence, there would be a second level of achievement. They would have to be a CDA first and then get the coronal polishing and/or. So this would be instead.
Is that right? Okay. Oh, I didn't really plan for that. This conceptual amendment would make it a requirement for a dental assistant to be certified by the Dental Assisting National Board before they become certified for coronal polishing and the restorative function as defined in the bill. It will just make sure that every dental assistant that is going to provide these additional services will have met the same qualifications. And, if we're going to have them do something, if you go into a dentist's office and you want them to be working on you in ways that they've never been allowed to before now. Okay. I'm not sure that's what I totally meant. Because what I meant was that in order for them to take this extra step, that's when they were going to have to be certified.
Madam Chair, just to make sure I understand, so you're requiring this sort of overreaching CDA certification for the other functions that they do as a dental assistant, and then additionally under the bill, but the bill would then require that they get this two specific certifications.
Well, I guess I could say that that's true.
Madam Chair, not knowing exactly what's required to get the two specific certifications, it seems like we're sort of double.
Yeah, and that really wasn't my intent originally. I just wanted, they don't have to be certified now, and if they wanted to stay uncertified and still work in a dentist's office, I wouldn't have a problem with that. And then if they were going to do the extra, they're going to have to go learn and be certified to do the extra. That's my concern.
Madam Chair, I believe that's what the bill does without the CDA requirements. Because it's restorative function certificate, coronal polishing certificate. That's what they have to get.
Okay. Gotta think this over then.
We may not need it.
Okay. Representative Roses.
I guess I'm questioning the need for amendment number one, because if we go to in the original version E that we had, there was a section 3 in there that dealt with section 08, 36, 315. which talks about grounds for discipline, suspension, or revocation of a license. And it says the board may revoke or suspend the license of a dentist or may reprimand, censure, or discipline a dentist or both if the board finds that after hearing that the dentist engaged in the performance of patient care or permitted the performance of patient care by persons under the dentist supervision that does not conform to the minimum professional standards of dentistry, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient occurred. So what's the need for the certification if the dentist in generally could lose the license if they allow someone to perform a duty for which they're not qualified to perform? So I think the amendment is already taken care of in existing statute.
Well, then, let's take Representative Fairclough.
Did you want to take a brief at ease?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm still going to think about it, but I am going to withdraw it at this time. And,
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Just in support of the amendment that you did bring forward, I think that there is reason to raise caution about our own medical board who receives a financial benefit, having them police themselves. I think that's valid, and I think that this speaks to this. But I also have heard the previous speakers, and I particularly appreciated Dr. Higgins in describing the challenges in rural Alaska and really needing, because of the increased costs and the limited capacity of, a contained population needing to be able to generate additional revenue so that he can make he or she's office successful there. And so that was the best argument that I've heard in support of this. But I just want for the record that the three items that you laid out as far as the accreditation going forward, the high school graduation with the 3,500 hours of work in the field or the other current graduation, I think are those are good standards that are established nationally, but I appreciate you withdrawing, and we'll work with the sponsor to see if we can put in check.
Yeah, because I think we really, we've all talked about it in plenty of other areas, not just this area, but we need to be very careful when somebody else is going to gain monetarily from something that we're not putting the fox guarding the chicken house, so to say. And so we want to make sure of that. So that's where I was coming from. And so I'm still going to be thinking about that, and we'll talk to the chairman of the next committee. So anyway, so I withdraw that amendment, and then I want to go to amendment number 2, and that's on page 3, line 4. And after board, insert that do not require the professional skill of a licensed dentist or licensed dental hygienist, including those provided in statute 832.110C of this chapter. So I'm just offering this amendment just to tighten up the language in the bill, because I want to make sure that the delegation to dental assistants follows statute in addition to those defined and regulated by the board. So that's just another tightening it up, and if there's any questions, any problems, hearing none, so amendment number 2 passes. And Representative Roses.
Thank you. I'd like to move, and I'll just call it conceptual, even though it's just a word, in case they have to reword it, but conceptual amendment number 3, which would be to page 3, line 11, change the words where it says dental facility, change that to dental office, so that it's consistent with the same on line 7.
Object for the purposes of the question, actually.
Okay, objection we've heard, and Representative Gardner.
Would it be appropriate to make the same change, where was it where we talked about it earlier? Never mind.
I think we took
that's
it.
Yeah.
We took
that's
it out.
Exactly what I removed. Okay, I remove my objection.
Okay, the objection has been moved, and the amendment, conceptual amendment number 3 then, has passed. Do I hear the wishes of the committee? Representative Fairclough.
Madam Chairman, the next committee that this goes to is the author of this bill. And so I will not put forward my amendment on sunsetting or measurable goals. I do think people sometimes can testify to what a bill will or won't do because they may think that the real hard tax of it might not be as pleasant as offering and expanding medical coverage. I totally respect all the dentists who said that this would help with Medicaid. I question personally whether it will increase the availability, but I do think it can make practices survive in smaller communities, and so I will be voting yes to move this bill forward. And I will talk to the sponsor, not tongue-in-cheek, but in a real way in between committees to see if it really is the intent to provide additional service to Medicare and Medicaid recipients, then I think it is worthwhile to add a subsection to have a review process. But if it's because, as was articulated by Dr. Higgins, something that is needed to help rural Alaska in having enough billable hours to sustain a practice, then I just don't think that it needs to be done. That I certainly understand the business aspect of business in rural or remote Alaska and the need for some flexibility in being able to sustain those businesses. And urban areas will benefit from this, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, I won't offer that amendment now. I will speak with the sponsor to see if there's that desire truly for increased Medicare, Medicaid, or if it's a business practice that we're addressing. But I appreciate your work on looking at the qualifications from your position in a licensing manner.
And I still will talk with the sponsor on that because I still think we need to work on that a little bit. So, Representative Keller.
I just wanted to commend the sponsor for the bill in general. I mean, we're looking for ways to cut costs. And what's happened here is I see it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but we've taken the lowest paid professional in the office and expanded the scope of what they can do. So what that does ultimately in the urban areas is allows dentists to compete. You know, in other words, you get a little bit more room there to save, you know, be more competitive in the market. So just thank you.
And Representative Faircloth and then Representative Roses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just in response to that, in addition, that lowest paid position, the office will be able to have a certificate where they're a little bit more marketable too inside the economy. So I appreciate helping people to help themselves.
And I know this will help in the rural areas, but I dare say we'll see dentists in the urban areas use it more than the dentists in the rural areas, more than likely. And I will be anxious to see if it will help increase with Medicaid patients, because we are spending so much money in so many areas flying them from Ketchikan to here instead of getting a dentist down there and getting them lined up doesn't make sense to me, you know. And so I hope that we definitely can see that. Representative Roses.
Thank you, and I appreciate the intent of where this bill is trying to go. I just hope it accomplishes its objective. And when we heard testimony from two different people that it's very difficult for a dentist's office to take a Medicare patient, especially if they're going to do a cleaning, for the amount of money that is being paid by Medicaid for this service, that a dentist really can't afford to do it. And so the intent was, at least the underlying assumption in the statement was, by having assistants be able to do this, we'll then be able to see more of those types of patients and make it cost effective. I found it a little bit difficult, let's put it that way, a little bit difficult in hearing the testimony from one of the dentists that testified saying that, no, it really wouldn't change necessarily the way they look at dealing with Medicaid patients, but it does make a difference in their profitability. While being a 30-year business person, I understand the bottom line. I understand a profit structure and the need to keep your doors open. It's not the job of the legislature to make somebody's business profitable, but it is our job to make sure patients that are not seen have the ability to be seen. And if this bill does not accomplish its objective, then I'm opposed to it. If it accomplishes its objective, I'm going to raise the flag as strong as the people that are sponsoring the bill. So that's why if the amendment does not get offered in the next committee to put in some kind of a sunset where we can do a study to see if it's accomplished its objective, then I intend to do it on the floor. Because while I support profitability in business, I don't think it's our job to legislate that. And so I'm hoping that all the discussion we heard last time is really what this is intended for, and not to increase the profitability of a dentist's office, but to increase care and access and the ability for people to get what they need. That's my intent of supporting this bill. So I will support moving it out of committee, but I will look closely at it on the floor.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have to respond, which is a bad thing. But my intent when I talk about good business practice for the record is so that we have accessibility to that care in rural communities. But I would support all of the remarks made by Representative Roses, too.
Do I hear a motion? Representative Fairclough.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move from committee the CS for HB 319, working draft 25, LS1281/K from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note if there is one. There was on the previous.
And hearing no objections, so moved. So we have passed out of committee House Bill 319. And thank you very much, and congratulations. It's your first bill.
You survived.
done with a smile, too.
So.
And the question was it as painful as a root canal?
With or without, no.
Representative Wilson and the committee, thank you so much for your support of this bill, and I look forward to working with you all again.
Thank you.
Got a beautiful smile.
Can we do the House bill before we do the date extension?
Well, they go together. And
I know that.
Well, they're both House bills.
I know, but I mean, could we do this before we just? I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I don't, like, frankly, I don't see why we can't commission this. This is it.
The officer is doing.
I know.
Okay, House Bill 276. My dyslexia is kicking in. They extend the Alaska Commission on Aging, and Representative Dahl is going to present her. We've got both of those are your bills, right?
Yes.
And so we're just going to do them together, and it's House Bill 276 and House Bill 279. So if you would, we're going to do them one at a time, however. So if you would do... tell us what the difference is between them, and in fact, tell us what 260 or 276 does.
For the record, I'm Andrea Dahl, representative from District 4. And I'm pleased to be here. I just thought you all could do two or three things all at the same time.
We can.
Back up.
Yep.
All right. House Bill 276 is simply extending the sunset provision for the Commission on Aging. And House Bill 279 is giving it some conforming language. That particular bill simply mirrors a change when the Commission on Aging was moved out of the Department of Administration, moved into the Department of Health and Social Services. And with that, some responsibilities were changed. And I can talk about that a little bit. But basically, they've been operating under these changed responsibilities for the last 5 years. And so when we went in front of the audit, when they went in front of the auditors for the extension of the sunset, the auditors suggested that they conform to their new responsibilities. So that's what it is. One is simply an extension of the sunset, and the other one is conforming language.
Okay. Any other questions? Pretty simple. It extends it to 2016.
I do have some questions on House Bill 279, so I would appreciate it if we did the first.
I was going to have my own little dog and pony show here, but I can certainly am willing to just go into questions.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Whatever you would like. However, I do what I would like to do with the extension of the sunset is actually ask the director of the Commission on Aging to also come and speak to you on this sunset provision. And she's here. So, but it's up to you completely if you want to do that or not.
We probably don't need it for the for this
all right,
bill.
That's fine.
The next bill we'll need it probably
all
more.
Right. All right.
So, Representative Fairfall?
Could you tell me the last time the statewide plan was adopted?
Well, let me see.
For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to Representative Dahl. The plan was just adopted in 2007. It's a four-year plan that's dated 2008 through 2011.
And I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to review the entire plan, but could you tell me, some people are trying to make points as we go forward onto the floor about shortening up time frames to make points on whether things are effective or not. And I support the reauthorization, so let me put your mind at ease on that first. But had the opportunity to ride on an airplane for several hours next to someone who served on the commission at one point a few years ago. And the issue was access of facilities for our aging population and how we are going to service them long term as our population is aging. So what I'm asking is there assessment in your planning process that addresses the facility needs and access for the aging to different types of care as we age?
You know, I believe that is in their statewide plan, and Denise
yes.
can certainly respond to that. And also, it is in their budget request. And so, if you would like, I can ask Denise to come up and respond to your.
I think Madam Chair wants to keep moving.
Yeah, because we'll have her go into that when she goes into the next.
I think that's fine, Madam Chair. All nothing right. on the extension.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, I would like to hear a motion.
Madam Chair?
Oh,
sorry.
Representative Rez has had his hand up.
That's fine. I don't care. Go ahead.
Representative Gardner.
I move House Bill 276, Version C, with any individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And yeah, there is one.
Any individual recommendations?
Mm-hmm.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. So that we have moved House Bill 276 out of committee, and now we will go right on to 279.
All right.
And 279, I'm sure we have some people online that are more interested in this part of the whole situation, so we will let Representative Dahl go ahead and do her dog and pony show on this part.
Oh, my dog and pony show was for the first one. I was all had the band and everything here, but this one it's really pretty simple, and I don't want to have people get all into the intricacies of this. But and as I say, Denise, I'm sure will be happy to do it. So I'm going to read a little blurb that I put together here. From 1982, when it was created, through 2003, the Alaska Commission on Aging was located within the Department of Administration. And because the Department of Administration did not have an independent grant-making authority, the Commission on Aging was given granting power so they could distribute federal money targeted at seniors. In 2003, Governor Murkowski signed Executive Order 108, and we have a copy of that with us. This moves the Commission on Aging to the Department of Health and Social Services. However, they already did have their grant-making power, so the executive order also moved those functions, grant-making, to the Division of Senior and Disability Services at HSS. The statutes were never changed. This current law is written with Alaska Commission on Aging and the Department of Administration writing their own grants. In 2006, when ACOA went through the sunset audit from legislative audit, the auditors discovered this discrepancy. The auditors recommended making statutory changes to conform to the changes made by Governor Murkowski. HB 279 was written for this purpose, It was written with the cooperation and participation of Alaska Commission State on Aging staff and the senior officials at DHSS. The bill, if passed, would codify the current situation. The Commission on Aging is responsible for planning and advocacy for Alaska seniors. The Division of Senior and Disability Services is responsible for administering and distributing federal funds. And those are the two distinctions between the administrative organizations.
And I do want to make a comment for anybody that's online listening. The work draft that's before us is the committee substitute for House Bill 279, version E. So would someone like to move that we have that bill before us so that that's Representative Rosen?
Thank you. I will move for, as a working draft, CS for House Bill 279 Hess. That would be version E.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure so that the people were that were listening in realize that it's not the original bill itself.
That's right.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Roses.
Thank you. Just a comment first, then a question. It's nice to see that somewhere in there somebody is actually appears to be supporting something that the Murkowski administration did. So, having read through this bill, it appears to me that are we not taking away a considerable amount of authority that the commission has by putting it under the department and saying that the department will administer, the department it has to be approved by the department, that there is considerable oversight by the department. Everywhere in here, commission is removed and department is put in. So what's left for the commission to do?
It is an educating and advocacy group. And they actually have many, many functions. And in fact, they have a wonderful state plan that's about 100 pages thick. So they do a great deal for our seniors, but it is actually, you're right, Representative Roses, it is an advocacy and education.
And it's kind of a house cleaning bill, really, because it's putting into statute what is really already happening.
Correct. And through the chair, Representative Roses, this is Ken Alper. I want to add one other thing. The committee substitute, the only change between it and the original work draft is in Section 3 on page 4. The commission is the primary agency in writing the state plan, and that was not really clear in the original draft of the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Roses.
Do we know how the commission members feel about this? Are they in support of all of this?
I would like to actually have someone come up and testify, Mr. Holbert.
Deputy Commissioner Hogan from HSS is in the audience, as is the chair of the Commission on Aging and the executive director. So when it's their turn, I believe they'll answer your question through the chair, Representative Roses.
Thank you.
Why don't we have both of them come up now?
Right.
So that's Bill Hogan, and I'm not even going to pronounce. You'll have to just tell us what your name is.
My name is Denise Daniello.
Okay.
For the record.
All righty. And Bill, I'll let you go first and kind of tell us what's been taking place and how the change happened, and then you can tell us how the commission feels about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Hogan. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Family, Community, and Integrated Services for the Department of Health and Social Services. I have responsibility for overseeing the Division of Senior and Disability Services, and I'm the primary liaison with many of our boards and commissions that work with our department, and not the least of which is the Commission on Aging. As Representative Dahl and others have indicated, the language in House Bill 279 is intended to put into statute what has been in practice since the executive order was signed effective July 1, 2003. There are a number of amendments to House Bill 279 that I should highlight. The first is that it essentially establishes that The department now has responsibility for establishing state policy for and administering the requirements of the Older Americans Act of 1965, and it also gives the department the authority to administer grants provided to service providers who serve older Alaskans as well as those for adult daycare and family respite care. I think the other thing that I certainly want to highlight is that we work very closely with the Commission on Aging. Ms. Danielle and I meet on a weekly basis. I have regular meetings in front of the Commission on Aging. The language that is in this bill was developed in conjunction with the Commission. The previous chair, Mr. Frank Apple, was instrumental in crafting some of the language that you see in House Bill 279. And as Representative Dahl indicated, we made this most recent change to acknowledge that the Commission on Aging still has primary responsibility for formulating the state plan and that they're doing that on the behalf of the department. But the department is now the designated state unit on aging. And the federal government requires that there be an entity in each state that is the state unit on aging. So we have a number of responsibilities that go with that designation. So I think, Madam Chair and committee members, I think the long and short of it is that we're very supportive of what you see in House Bill 279. We have an excellent working relationship with the Commission on Aging, and we would like your support to the bill.
Okay, thank you. Danielle.
Hi, for the record, my name is Denise Daniello, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging, and I'm here in support of HB 279. The Commission does support this legislation. As Commissioner Hogan pointed out, it was actually our former chair who crafted most of the language that you see before you in the bill, which is basically a reflection of, you know, of current practice. It's, you know, to bring statutes up to what, you know, what everybody is doing in terms of our roles and responsibilities. The Commission plays a very important role for older Alaskans, and I don't want anybody to think this role has been diminished. It is true that we are no longer the grant-making body that we once were as the state unit on aging. However, because of that, we have been able to focus more on planning. As you know, we have developed the state plan for senior services and have done so since 1982. And I actually have copies here to share with you if you would like a copy. We're also very strong advocates for older Alaskans and their caregivers. For example, during every quarterly meeting, we have public comment period that people present their public comment to commission members regarding issues affecting seniors and caregivers in their communities. We host informal coffee chats with seniors and family caregivers and providers and anybody else who's interested in talking about senior issues. We advocate to legislators. A lot of you, I think, know us. And to the governor and to the department about issues that are of concern for older Alaskans. And we've, along with our partners, have been successful in getting a lot of good legislation passed, including the Senior Benefits Program, creation of the Office of Advocacy and Elder Abuse. We've also helped to strengthen calls against identity theft involving seniors, supported stable funding for the flexible long-term care supports programs for people with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, and many other services too for seniors. We also advocate on behalf of older Alaskans to our congressional delegation on federal issues having to do with workforce development and also Medicare reimbursement rates, which you've heard a lot about. Other responsibilities are providing recommendations to the department and the Alaska Mental Health Authority regarding the use of monies from the mental health settlement for seniors who are afflicted with mental illness, behavioral conditions, as well as Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. So as you see, and that's just sort of brushing the surface. I haven't even gone into our community education responsibilities. The commission has a very important responsibility for older Alaskans and their family caregivers, and so we support this legislation, and we want it to go forward.
Any questions? I think you said it very well.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone online that would like to make any comments? No, none online. It looks like we have one more here, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it. The last name looks like L-E-L.
L-A-L. Banarsi Lal is our chair.
Okay, if she would come forward.
He.
I can't. It's. I think it was written by the same person that wrote your name, Denise.
Yeah. You have a handwriting.
Thank you for joining us. Aha. Okay. All right. If you'd state your name and your affiliation, you can give those to Becky.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Banarsi Lal, and I'm from Fairbanks. I have the privilege of chairing the Alaska Commission on Aging. This is my seventh year on the commission, so I have seen a number of, you know, good things happen, and I believe, you know, that despite the fact that there was a lot of concern when the executive order was issued by Governor Murkowski, that took away our grant-making authority, but I don't think that that was such a traumatic situation. The grant-making did take a lot of time, you know, from the commission's primary function of being the eyes and ears of the seniors in the state of Alaska. The thing that we really wanted to focus on was, you know, the education of the seniors about the availability of existing services, and being a strong advocate for their needs, you know. And we did that, you know, through solicitation of input from them, and put that in the shape of a form of the plan, you know, that you have just received. Now, in my time on the commission, this is the second plan that we have developed in, as always, you know, the plan is submitted to the state of Alaska, to the commissioner's office and the governor, and it gets approved, you know, then forwarded over to the Region 10 office of the Office of Older American Programs. So it's a long process, and we certainly, in spite of the fact that we are a very small board with limited resources and the fewest staff, we have only four. We certainly are. We enjoy doing that, and we have the drive and the interest in doing that. And the 2006, you know, the White House Conference on Aging, you know, gave us another wonderful opportunity to connect with the seniors. And so we had forums all over the state of Alaska, and certainly had another, you know, perspective on the existing needs and the shortages and the deficiencies in the system. And the department had been very supportive of the initiative that we had proposed. There's a big report, you know, from the legislative audit, and I don't need to dwell on it. You probably have received it. See, this is probably one of the best reports, you know, that volunteer commissioners could expect, and thank you for doing this. So we are very grateful, you know, for the audit report, and that truly reflects, you know, some of the hard work that gets done by the volunteer board. So I am, you know, I'm very encouraged, you know, by your support of the two House bills, and I look forward to working with you in articulating the needs of the seniors. The last thing I wanted to mention, which has probably nothing to do with this bill, is that you need to look at the growing needs of a growing population, you know, and just, you know, maintaining the status quo is certainly not going to take you to the point, you know, where those needs would be addressed. I think we need to take long-term. You need to take of what's going to happen, you know, 5-10 years from now, and it's position yourself to doing that. And I think the state plan does provide a framework, you know, that takes you all the way up to at least up to 2011. So that's a document. And whenever you have time, please take a look at our annual report. You know, it has got very useful information.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And if you have any questions, I'm sure Denise and I can attempt to answer.
I don't see any questions, but I would, Pat Davidson, I just need a nod from you, unless you want to do some testifying, but if this bill is within the area that your suggestions were, we probably need to know that. And we did get the that's part of our packet, but if you want to make a few comments, you're welcome to.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Pat Davidson was in on the legislative audit that took place. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. As it relates to House Bill 279, the audit did recommend that the statutes be changed for those areas that represent administration of the grants. As the chairman said, it took a lot of time from the commission previously. Prior audits had findings in relationship to how well they were monitoring or not how well they were monitoring. And so to the extent that the sections in the bill reflect the changes to the grants, those are supported by the audit recommendation.
Okay, thank you very much. Don't see any questions. Thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else that would like to testify? Seeing none, I'm going to close testimony on this, and then we will proceed. Any discussion by the committee? Seeing no discussion, do we have a motion? Representative Keller.
Let's see if I can get this right. I move CS for House Bill 279 Hess. Version E from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Fantastic. You did it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And see no objection. So moved. So congratulations. We've got the both bills passed now. On to the next committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Yes, thank you. Wait a second. I'm talking.
All right, now we have a presentation by the Alzheimer's, and I feel that this is related to the Commission on Aging, and it's our final agenda item on today's agenda, and we will hear a short presentation about this because the conditions facing us in the next few years, as our demographics and the studies have found, that we're going to kind of, the tables are going to be turned, and our biggest population is going to be our senior population. So, Connie, if you would come forward and tell us what this is all about.
Chair Wilson and representatives, members of the committee, thank you for having us today. My name is Connie Seif, and I'm actually executive director of Center for Community, which is a nonprofit based in Sitka and does a lot of home care, including to people with Alzheimer's and other things. But today, if you'll please, I'm filling in for Dulce Nobra, who is the executive director of the Alzheimer's Resource Agency of Alaska. She couldn't be here. Her education chief couldn't be here. So I have a lot of background experience in aging, and I was here with the AgeNet fly-in and volunteered to fill in. I'm supposed to give you the Alzheimer's, kind of the science, another part. And I've been prepping and redoing and catching up on my homework. Debbie Newsham is also here, and Debbie is a board member of the Alzheimer's Resource Agency of Alaska. This is an independent organization, not affiliated with the American Alzheimer's Association, but certainly involved in things, keeping up with what they do. And Debbie is also a family caregiver, so of a person with Alzheimer's. So I thought maybe we'd actually back up. You have a packet, and actually just slow down and say, well, you know, we all have heard about it, and we see about it in movies. What is this? And when you hear people talk about it as ADRD, what do they mean? Well, Alzheimer's disease and related dementias is what ADRD stands for. It's one of the beneficiary groups in the Alaska Mental Health Trust, because back in the old days, people with senile dementia were sent to Morningside Hospital as being criminally insane. So they were one of the protected beneficiary groups of the original Federal Mental Health Trust. Dementia is an irreversible cognitive disease in the brain. And there are actually many kinds. We tend to lump them all together and call them Alzheimer's. Dr. Alzheimer, over a little over 100 years ago, was the first person to diagnose a young woman in her 50s who died of this within about a four-year period. And she actually has the genetic kind that's really, I don't know if anything can be more devastating, but there's an early onset, a before age 65 onset that runs in certain families, very sometimes even in age 30. We had a former bus driver for the senior caravan here in Juneau who came down with it and died within 4 or 5 years in his early 50s. Went from serving seniors to being a person served. So the dementias, Alzheimer's, there's usually functional things is how it's seen, because you don't know until someone dies for sure. I still don't know until you have autopsies, but you can do a lot of diagnosis. To be considered one of these dementias, there has to be decline in two specific functions. One we know the most about is loss of memory for short-term memory. That's usually present. Then, depending on how the brain is affected, the root cause, other things, you have the person losing the ability to generate coherent speech or to understand spoken or written language. You might have them lose the capacity to plan, make sound judgments, and carry out complex tasks, or the ability to process and interpret visual information. For instance, if you took a bunch of Girl Scouts to Pioneer's home, to the Alzheimer's wing, in Halloween costumes, some people, they remember that those are scary things, but not that they're just children in scary costumes. So they no longer process, perhaps, the information correctly. And the decline must be severe enough to interfere with their ability to carry out their day-to-day life. That whole group is called dementias. There's Alzheimer's, which is a disease. There's vascular dementia, which is a lot of tiny little strokes, we used to call multi-infarct dementia. Mixed dementia. Parkinson's disease actually has a dementia component. There's mad cow disease has a dementia component. There's five or six other types, and they're actually fairly hard to tell the difference. Diagnostic medical tests, medical treatment of people with suspected Alzheimer's is very important, because there are also quite a few treatable conditions that can be treated and that can reverse what appears to be a dementia. And so it's very important that a person have competent medical care and that there be a fair amount of testing done to rule out other physical causes for the same sort of functional deficits. Then after that, psychologists can test memory and function and some of the other things, and to give a family a diagnosis. Alzheimer's at this point is still a fatal disease. It is the fourth leading cause of death among adults in America. It is about equally affects men and women. The average life expectancy with Alzheimer's is 8 years, but it can be as much as 20. And the person will eventually be bedbound, unable to, and in an infantile state if they live that long. So it's a serious condition, and the prevalence is pretty high. And the biggest predictor is age at this point. At this point, we are up to 1 in 2 of every person over age 85. We're at 1 in 8 of every person over 65. In Alaska, the statistics from the Alzheimer's Association, backed up by the research at the National, are that there are about approximately 5,000 Alaskans with one of these dementias. They are taken care of for great part. 75% of their care is done by family members at home. Alzheimer's and dementias are particularly difficult. Many, many times a family can't cope all the way through the end stages because of so many different factors of the family's capacity, the way other medical conditions interplay with the dementia, the behavioral aspects that can happen with the dementia, the need to control those, perhaps even chemically, violence that might harm somebody else in the house, but a person who believes he's in the middle of World War II, and those people moving down the hall in the dark are snipers, not children. I'm just giving you some examples, but But it's a complex thing. The Pioneers Homes here, we're very lucky, have become specialists in assisted living service to people with dementias. We're lucky as a state. That decision was made some time ago. National Alzheimer's Association estimates that, has done work up in all the states, and they estimate that over 11 million hours of unpaid care in Alaska are given every year to people with Alzheimer's and dementias at a value of over $112 million if you paid that for that. In addition, these families and these clients do use services from the Commission on Aging plans for, Medicaid services, senior in-home grant services. They use everything from meals coming in during the day, some respite to give the family members a break, some personal care sometimes when a person's still living alone but just no longer can function to take care of themselves, but some need someone to come in and maybe help them through the bath routine, do their shopping. Many of them attend adult day centers, which in this state, there are only a couple of private. Most of them are supported by grants from the state, and without those grants, most communities like Sitka, most southeast communities, can't afford to have an adult day center. Assisted living homes, many of them have specialty units for the more advanced persons with dementia, and a small use of nursing homes. Nursing homes generally don't like to have clients with dementia unless they are also very physically, medically compromised in some other way, because their behavior is difficult to control and they are difficult to appropriately serve and keep happy and stimulated in the presence of people with all those other complex medical conditions. So dementia is a broad spectrum thing. We call it Alzheimer's after Dr. Alzheimer's. There are not yet any drugs that treat it, cure it, or prevent it. There are five approved, FDA-approved drugs that appear to, they have good evidence that they do some slowing down. They sometimes reduce some of the accompanying symptoms. There's a fair amount of medication that's used in terms of anti-anxiety, anti-depression, other things that go along with helping treat the person and help their families deal with this. So I'd like to, you know, if there are questions about kind of like the scientific aspect or the background, the prevalence, the statistics, I can field those. But Debbie's also pretty much of an expert on that, too. and she was going to go over the legislative agendas for the Alzheimer's Association of Alaska are very similar to some that you've heard this session already. One, a high level, is Medicaid waiver coverage for people with Alzheimer's, something that the state's been working on for a long time, and it seems hard. And we hope to let, although we're optimistic, the Department of Health and Social Services has said it's working on that. We hope that you, the legislature, will keep your scrutiny turned that direction to make sure it actually gets somewhere fairly soon. And also, if possible, a funding increase for the senior grants. The senior grants that the Commission on Aging and the senior department take care of and give out, those grants haven't had increases in 10 years. A new adult daycare center has not started in this state since I was commissioned executive chair in 1994, because it takes a supporting grant plus Medicaid plus fundraising to be able to, for most places, most small places, to have an adult day center. So there hasn't been much expansion in this area of services despite a burgeoning of the population, a burgeoning of, you know, these incidences of people with these concerns. So there is the FACES initiative being supported by the commission. I didn't unfortunately make it in the governor's budget, just asking for $1.5 million in GF to help with the GF part, the general fund part of the grants that help support the families.
Right. And those are the senior grants that have been in place for a long time. We've kind of...
You want to state your full name?
Oh, my name, sorry. My name is Debbie Newsham. I live in Eagle River. I am a board member for the board of directors of the Alzheimer's Resource Agency, and most prominently, I'm a caregiver for my father who has Alzheimer's. And I inherited my father, actually, when my mother died. You know, she had been the primary caregiver until her disease. Actually, I got a phone call one day that she was terminal. My grandmother, who was in Providence Extended Care Center, my mother could no longer care for her, and I needed to pick my dad up from the hospital because he was creating a scene. And that was, I mean, imagine the next time you pick up a phone, that's the call you get.
and that's what happens to us. That's all part of it. The way we had my father diagnosed was he had violent outbursts. I don't mean he got a little nasty or a little pushy. He actually systematically destroyed a room full of furniture, piece by piece by piece, because my mother asked him not to put a cup of coffee on it. And that was his response. That was the rage level we were living with. And that's very common, unfortunately. So we started pursuing what's going on, and we found out, and we were able to medicate my dad. And we kind of kept him doped there for a while, pretty doped, actually, so we could keep him at home. And then as my mother became sicker, and I actually moved into their home in Eagle River while my children and husband lived in Anchorage, to care for them, I became the full-time caregiver for everyone. And it was a wonderful experience. I mean, I have to say, even with all, you know, that downside, my mother taught me how to be a caregiver. And she taught me how to do it. And she was very concerned that my father, that there would be too much money in the bank when she died. And the day before she died, she sent me to the bank to take out $10,000 out of their account. I walked in with a briefcase, said, I'll take $10,000, please, loaded it into the briefcase, and went about my life. And I thought it was a perfectly reasonable and rational thing to do to carry $10,000 in a briefcase with me wherever I went. I went, and after my mom died and I became the decision maker, I went to the Alzheimer's resource carrying my little briefcase, and they're like, oh, honey. And, you know, they had a little, you know, intermission with me, you know, pulled me in a room and said, you're a little stressed. These are the things that we can do for you. And they explained care coordination. They explained respite. They explained there are services out there. There are places I can go. And I was like, oh, okay, well, cool. All right, well, then sign me up. And I was very, very lucky. I got care coordination, and I was able to put some programs in place. And I tried to continue to work full time. We moved my family from Anchorage into our home in Eagle River. The house is too small. Our dining room is my son's bedroom because we no longer eat at a table because there's just not enough room in the house. It's a retirement home. It's not a home for six people. So we're all settled in. We've got everybody there. I had things lined out. I was working full time. I mean, I thought I had it going. I mean, I was, you know, and the money started dwindling in the briefcase eventually, but I was working. Pretty soon, my dad's behavior became challenged again. He was becoming ill, and I was having to leave work. And I was having to leave work a lot. And that's when I realized I could no longer work. I was the primary breadwinner. My husband is a bus driver. We all know they don't make a lot of money. So I quit my job. And with that meant I lost my long-term care insurance. I lost my retirement. I lost all of it and forego. And at the same time, I've spent my inheritance. Okay, so at this point, I have no inheritance. I've refinanced the house to pull the equity out of it so I could finance my dad's care. And now I'm looking at having a child go to college. And we're applying, you know, $32,000 for Georgia Tech to be an electrical engineer. And they believe that our contribution should be $10,000 a year as the family. We make $50,000 a year. So we're taking out loans to do that. I don't know that we're going to be able to pay them back. I'm hoping when things are better, when the time comes. But, you know, my dad's pretty gosh darn healthy. You know, he doesn't know who I am. He does know where he is. Sometimes he wants to go home. It's not safe for him to be alone. I mean, if you ever looked at, like, potpourri, it's so pretty. You got your little cinnamon and dried apples. He thinks it's a snack. You know, so I've had to go through, you know, and you remove all of that stuff from the home. We recently had an issue with peanut butter. He made himself a peanut butter sandwich. I was thrilled. like, "You go, Dad. Look at you, big man." And I kept seeing him with this peanut butter sandwich, which is not uncommon because it may take someone with a dementia hours to eat a meal because they forget they're eating. They'll fall asleep. All types of behaviors will occur. And I went into the kitchen to start dinner, and I realized he had eaten a whole loaf of bread and a whole jar of peanut butter because he forgot to stop eating. He wasn't hungry. He just forgot to stop. And that is somebody who physically he's capable. He doesn't have a serious enough health condition that he would need skilled nursing, but that is not someone that can be left alone. He cannot be left alone at all. He's funny, you know, and we've been able to get his medication settled. My daughter recently came home from college, and when she left for college, I explained to her that she was going to lose her room. It was not going to be a shrine to, you know, my darling child. It was going to become my youngest's bedroom, and we were going to have a table again. And she understood. She went to college. She came home for Christmas. She walked into her room, and she sat down, and she cried. And I said, "Honey, we talked about this, you know, and all your friends at school are going through this. You never go home again." She said, "Yes, but they haven't been thrown out. I have." All of her stuff was gone. It was in boxes. It was so traumatic for her. Even though she warned, even though she knew, even though she support what we were doing, she still had that grief and that loss and felt unwanted and unwelcome in her own home. So we sent her back in January, and, you know, we just keep supporting her and, you know, saying eventually it's not going to be like this. And we have very real conversations. Like, you know, unfortunately, when your grandpa dies, you're going to have a room again. I promise. You just have to wait. You know, and there's chilling conversations you have like that. And what enables us to do it is I receive 10 hours of respite a week.
Just 10 hours?
That's it.
And you co-pay for that. It's not free.
I co-pay. It's not free. And what that does is that covers the period of time between the time my husband leaves for work and I come home from work. That 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. It is not for me to get my nails done. It is not to get my hair done, even though I do. But it is for me to have a job, for me to be able to contribute to society. And it's some measure, in some professional sense, to get outside and deal with things. And you look at what caregivers do, the median income for a caregiver is $44,000 a year. The average median expenses for someone, $5,500 a year.
For the person with the Alzheimer's?
It's for caregiving in general, not just Alzheimer's, not just dementia. It could be someone with cancer. It's caregivers in general. That's over 10% of your income is spent. So what do? We cut our travel, we cut leisure, we cut our health insurance, we cut our medical. I recently had to have a cavity in July, and I couldn't get in because of my dad's appointments. By the time I got in, I needed to have a root canal. Well, problem was I couldn't schedule the appointment with time the dentist had. It was not time I was available because of my dad's care. So I waited 3 weeks with a bare nerve exposed and ended up having to just suck on Percocet and wait until I could do this for 3 weeks. If I had something that needed some real care, we would be in a world of hurt because he cannot be away from me. He needs to touch base with me. He doesn't know who I am. You know, sometimes I'm his grandmother. He told me when I sent the kids to school, he said, "I'll just sit on grandma's lap until everybody comes home." His grandmother died when he was less than 5, you know, and he was telling me about going to school. We've had to shut the cable off because somebody let him watch stuff on the news. And he was patrolling the house, and he was going, and there were bad guys out there that were trying to get in to hurt us, and he was going to get them. And so I called the doc, and I'm like, "We need to dope him." And we did. We increased the antidepressants and stuff so that he could sleep throughout the night and that it would be safe for my 11-year-old. because he would not recognize my 11-year-old. We have pictures on the wall in front of our bathroom of relatives from, you know, 1800s, the ones that came over in the boat. My dad stood in the hall trying to go to the bathroom and finally came in and said, there's a line to the bathroom. He thought those pictures were people waiting to go in the bathroom. And he just stood in the hall waiting. I was like, oh, Daddy. So we had to take the pictures. And what we did is we just turned them around. Because they'd always been there, I didn't want to confuse them because consistency is very important. You know, so he's used to the shape being there, but now he doesn't see a face when he looks at it. You know, you have to throw things away. You have to prove to him. We were in the store, and he had unfortunately lost control of his bowels. And I was aware that there was an issue. And I kept saying, Dad, I think we need to go to the bathroom. And he's like, no, not me. Everything's fine. And I'm going, I think we do. And without realizing that I'm in a public place, I reached around like you do with a kid, pulled his pants back, and looked inside. And this woman standing there, she's like, you know, and my dad just, you know, he's like, oh, I guess we better go. I said, yeah, I guess we better go. You know, and that's, and he's, he allows me to care for him. He allows me to do these things for him that I couldn't. And I am not unique. I am one of 5,000 people doing this for. And it's a three-generation effect. It's not just my dad. It's not just me as the caregiver. It's my children. And it's their future as well. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's a bargain for the state at $700 a year to help me make this thing happen. And that $1.5 million that we're asking to have increased, you know, there are other services that I would kill to have, to be perfectly honest. One of the things I'd love to have, sure, I would love to have somebody come and shovel my walk so that I can get my dad safely from our house to the car without me, because I can't go out and shovel if he's inside the house alone. There has to be somebody else there to do that. There always has to be somebody. And my husband and I work opposite schedules. We are single parents in a two-parent home because the only time we see one another is on weekends. So, for a bargain price of an additional, I mean, we choose to do this. We love to do this. And those of us who receive care can do it longer.
Some family support. You know, when you talk about this, when you talk about services to seniors, whether it's through the Medicaid waiver or it's the senior grants, what you're really talking about is you're helping support families carry this role. And every family can carry it a certain part of the distance and a certain part of the burden. And some families can do more and some can do less.
Right.
Sometimes their situation or the client's harder to deal with. But it's a support to families. Mm-hmm. It's not a give. It's not a charity. It's not a giveaway. Even Medicaid waivers. I mean, these are all people who at that point, they're Alzheimer's and, because there are some people who have waivers now who have mm-hmm. Alzheimer's because they also have another bad medical condition. And they could be in nursing homes or they can be at home and we can support the families to do what they want to do, which is keep them there if they can. So any questions? I mean, we've taken a lot of your time, Kitty, and I know it's not a hard, it's not an easy topic to talk about. I once chewed my father out because he was teasing my mother about memory loss things and that she had Alzheimer's. I said, don't you do that, Daddy. So that's the most cruel thing you could do. Alzheimer's is sort of like the AIDS of aging. It's a terrifying idea. Don't tease.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and it's funny, and the numbers of people, I can even say, I always do this on the anniversary of my mom's death because I've always wanted to memorialize her life somehow, but I can't talk to my father about it because he doesn't know who she was. She has no siblings. I have no siblings. It just kind of is another day on the calendar, but I need to do something. So what I do is I take ice cream to the firemen. I'll take, you know, I kind of like firemen, so, you know, I take root beer floats. You know, I'll admit, you know, there's a little trip in there for me. You know, root beer floats one year, Sundays, Cold Stone or whatever. So there I was at Cars in Eagle River. I bought like 20 gallons of ice cream, toppings, all this kind of stuff, and one Diet Pepsi. And this woman in front of me, she just kept laughing and watching me, and she goes,
are you having a party? And I thought about it, and I finally said, I am having a party. You know, and I told her, and she, her lips started to quiver, her eyes filled with tears. She had taken care of her mother, who had died 6 months earlier. You know, and she said, oh, I cannot believe it. Thank you, you know, for being in there for me. And that's just chance.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had a, when I worked as a nurse at Randall Hospital, we have 18 long-term care beds. And so we had, I can remember this one lady, and over the years that I worked there, which was like 6 or 7 years, I could see her degress, I guess mm-hmm. you'd say, in her condition. But there was a period of time that she couldn't remember anything except her babies. Right. And if we gave her a doll, mm-hmm. she was totally comfortable with that doll. But that only lasted probably about 4 months. And then that was gone. And then she could, but she, you know, she would cry and be upset. And she'd be looking for them and couldn't find them. And, you know, they're in another world.
Absolutely.
And it is very, very difficult to deal with it. And I can't imagine, because as a nurse, mm-hmm. you know, you have your shift.
And then you go home.
And then, you know, and sometimes you are constantly right there because they're screaming or hollering or upset about something, and they, and you're trying to comfort them in ways that they can't be comforted many times, and for someone that is home being the caregiver that really needs to get some sleep, but that sometimes goes on all day and all night.
Absolutely.
You know,
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that was another thing. I was so sleep deprived that I was literally walking into walls, you know, because I was, you know, been up all night. And that was part of the decision, is my behavior became unsafe. And that was one of the factors why I quit my job, was, you know, not only was I an unreliable, no longer, you know, good employee, I wasn't safe driving. You know, there had those other issues. And the advantage of having my dad at home is just about that baby. I know what he's talking about. I can latch on to that, and I can respond to the emotion without him having to verbalize it. And that's what keeps George Jackson alive, not just the body, not just the shell. It's who my dad is. So. And, you know, the Mental Health Trust had this increase, this incremental in the budget, and we kind of lost it when it came out of OMB. And we're hoping that we can fund this increment and get it back in there because we need the help.
Thank you so much for sure. sharing with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, and the folders, it rained. They got wet. So they kind of stuck together, and I'm like, bet they're going, sorry.
You should know we opened them.
So. Yeah, we can hear you ripping them open. It was our little test. No.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, and we will gavel out and see you next Thursday.